underwriting support for the Book Show podcast on WAMC.org comes from Northshire Bookstore, Manchester Center, Vermont, and Saratoga Springs, New York. An independent bookstore offering books, author events, gifts for children and adults, and more. Northshire.com. And from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a new Bachelor of Science degree in Public Health with a focus on social, physical, and behavioral sciences. strose.edu.
Welcome to The Book Show, a celebration of reading and writers. I'm Joe Donahue. It's been more than two decades since award-winning author Charles Frazier had wild success with his debut novel, Cold Mountain. It became an international bestseller that won the National Book Award and was adapted into award-winning film. Not surprisingly, Frazier's fourth novel, Verena, is one of the most anticipated books of the year. It's a return to the Civil War era for Frazier, which also was the setting for Cold Mountain. A young Verena Howell marries the much older widower, Jefferson Davis, expecting a life of security as a Mississippi landowner. Instead, her husband pursues politics and becomes the president of the Confederacy, placing Verena at the center of one of the darkest moments in American history. Again, his new novel is Verena, and before a live audience at Northshire Bookstore in Saratoga Springs, New York, in an off-the-shelf event, it's a great pleasure to welcome Charles Frazier to this week's book show. At what point in your the chronology here, after the last book, did the life of Verena Davis come onto your radar as someone that you wanted to track and ultimately write a novel about?
Well, I didn't know anything about her, nothing, and wasn't interested in her husband and never have been. But I read this piece that said that shortly after he died in Biloxi, Mississippi, in 1889, I think it was, she packed her bags and at age 60, 61, moved to New York City to become a writer. And I thought, well, that's a unlikely sounding thing. And I love that idea of anybody, but particularly a woman at that time and that age, starting this whole new life. And that's what hooked me on her, is that that moving forward at that age.
The novel seems to want to spend more time with her in the after than in the before.
Yeah, the sense of loss, memory, guilt, and persistence I wanted to look at, to you know, for her to realize her complicity in the slave system, the benefits she had for the first half of her life due to slavery. Jefferson had a big plantation. His brother had next door an enormous plantation. They had between them hundreds and hundreds of slaves. And his position in Washington grew out of that. Their wealth, of course, grew out of that. But his position of political power in Washington did as well.
Give us a sense of how you decided to tell the story in the sense of chronology, because it is not chronological. You go back and forth. We'll get a little bit into how you do that, but when did that decision come?
I usually just write whatever comes to mind for a few months, but at some point you have to start thinking about a shape for this thing. She used to go in the summertime to resort hotels and stay for, if she could afford it, she'd stay for a few weeks. If she could afford it, she'd stay all summer. And I thought, well, you know, I don't know that she ever stayed here, but I know this town a little bit better than other ones. And so I thought, let's put her there. It opens up with a middle-aged man carrying a blue book, walking into a resort hotel outside of town. It's race season, which you get to have a race scene. and he comes in and asks at the desk to speak to Mrs. Davis. And then you find out who he is and that they go back to when he was a little child in Richmond. And that hotel becomes structurally the place you keep coming back to and you know where you are in time. It's 1906 at Saratoga Springs in that hotel. And then her memory, I didn't want to write the book based on a calendar pattern. I wanted to write it based on a memory pattern. So you come back here, it's in present tense, present time, and then she drifts off into seven decades of her own history and American history.
I was thinking of this, of what is the advantage of telling it through memory. I mean, I think there's obviously the advantage for the storyteller of her story, but also for you as the writer and the freedom that gives you.
Yeah, you could take this book and order everything chronologically, and there were times struggling with the structure of it that it was like, you know, screw it, let's just make it chronological. But I think it's the way most people are when they have some decades under their belts and start thinking back, and you think about this thing and it reminds you of this other thing. So he comes to visit her on Sundays from Albany, and they sit at the hotel and he asks her questions, and she just sort of to some degree free associates her memories, her interpretation of her life, a mixture of I've suffered the consequences of being on the wrong side of history, and oh gosh, I loved Washington back in 1850.
What was it that about her wanting to write, that idea of a woman in her 60s who says, okay, I'm going to go to New York, I'm going to write?
One of the things that amazed me as I started looking at her circle of friends, how many of those women wrote books later in their lives. Mary Chesnut, I don't know how many of you have ever heard of Mary Chesnut, but she wrote a journal of her Civil War years, and she was just the liveliest mind and funny and so sharp-eyed on observations of people, especially in their, you know, their pretensions and that kind of thing. Her big book was never published during her lifetime, but is just an incredible document of the American Civil War. But several other of her friends and acquaintances wrote memoirs, novels. It was an interesting group of writing women.
It's an off-the-shelf version of The Book Show. We are in Saratoga Springs, New York, talking to Charles Frazier about his new novel, Verena, published by Echo. I'm hoping you can read a portion from the beginning of the novel, which is just a fascinating scene.
This little bit happens just a few days before the fall of Richmond. Verena packed up her children and this little boy that we'll talk about in a few minutes, whose nickname was Jimmy Limber. Right. They took off south to escape what was almost certainly about to happen to Richmond. Things fell apart slowly before they fell apart fast. Late March, Friday night before Richmond burned, V fled the false White House and the capital city. That afternoon, she and Ellen Barnes packed in a rush, knowing they might never be back. Billy and Jimmy went back and forth from V to Ellen, touching their arms or hips for reassurance. Ellen always kept her hair parted in the middle and oiled, pulled back tight against her scalp. But that day, long curling strands escaped, and she kept sweeping them back from her face. "Don't fret, Jimmy Limber," Ellen said. "Just a little jaunt south. Billy's been on one before, so ask him about it." Ellen took an apple out of her apron pocket and held it in both hands to get the boy's attention. Then, with hardly any effort or sensation of motion, she snapped it perfectly in half and handed the pieces to the boys, and they went on their way laughing. When the packing was done, Jeff took V aside and gave her a departure present. This is true. A purse pistol. Slight and pretty. Almost an art object suited for display in a museum. "Do you know how to load and aim and fire?" he said. "I didn't grow up in Mississippi for nothing," she said. He said that if the country fell, she'd take the children to Florida, find passage to Havana. Then he told V to keep the little pistol with her at all times, and if Federals tried to violate her, she should shoot herself. Or if she couldn't do that, at least fire it in their direction and make them kill her. He gave her what money he could gather, and she had been building her own hoard of running money from selling furnishings and china and crystal. Her carriage horses had been seized for the army, and Jeff said he couldn't allow her to take food beyond a few pounds of flour and grits and dried beans. Wouldn't be fair. But he didn't believe at all Richmond or the nation faced doom. This alarm would be like all the others. 2 weeks from now, she would be coming back. General Lee would find a way. Except V knew it wasn't like the other alarms, because he hadn't gifted her a suicide pistol before now.
Well, and that isn't in the NRA literature, is it? If you yeah, pack some heat, and if the trouble's brewing, just shoot yourself.
She tells somebody that story later, and the other person says, "Did he know how a gun works?" You aim it at the other person.
Let's talk about Jimmy Limber. This is a fascinating character, but a fascinating real-life child. And so tell us about how this boy comes into the life of this couple.
This was one of those things I found early on that was like finding out that she moved to New York City. That a probably about 5 or 6 year old multiracial boy lived in the Confederate White House alongside Verena and Jeff Davis's children. When I was working on the book and would tell people, they'd say, "What are you working on?" I'd tell that story, and it was like, "So that's the made up part. That was not the made up part. That's true." And there's a picture. If you Google Jimmy Limber, you'll see a studio photograph of this little boy all dressed up, standing next to a very ornate chair. That part's true. He went with Verena when they left Richmond, all the way south, a lot of the time camping in wagons and horses and rough travel till they were captured, and then he was separated from her. He disappears from history about a year after that. But what I was interested in was inventing a life for that little boy, and to imagine him coming back, finding Verena when he's a middle-aged man, living in Albany, teaching school, and she's up here at a hotel for the summer, and he comes up to the door, goes to the desk of the hotel, and he has to convince her that he is who he is. But at that time, she had 6 children. 5 of them had died, and it's like a lost child has returned. And he's the catalyst for her remembering her life, telling her story. He also becomes, as he gets more comfortable with her, a bit of an interrogator in challenging her answers and some of her sense of entitlement and that sort of thing.
Did you find yourself doing that, interrogating her in some way?
Yeah. And Verena is not someone I saw as a hero when I started the book, and not someone I saw as a hero when I finished the book. But what I saw was a woman who, as I said, benefited greatly from slavery, was complicit in that in a number of different ways, lost everything from being on the wrong side of history, but who in her 60s and 70s, when she died, she was 80 years old, and she was still moving forward in her thinking, in her understanding of her own life, at an age when a lot of us start becoming more and more entrenched in our pasts and more defensive of our pasts and wanting to feel that the world we knew when we were younger was so much better than now and all that. She was remaining engaged with the world around her at the moment. There was an interview done with her in the last year of her life at one of these resort hotels. A reporter from New York came, and one of the things the article says is she knows all the new books. She reads, you know, keeps up with fiction especially, and current events and all that. I found that fascinating. And I'm not interested much in perfection because none of us achieve it. I was interested in the struggle, the effort, the faults, and the parts of her that are interesting and some parts that are admirable.
Charles Frazier is our guest. The name of the new novel is Verena. It is published by Echo. Much is being made in the early press for this book about you returning to the Civil War era in this fourth novel, the debut, of course, being Cold Mountain. Was that a conscious choice, or did that just happen because you came on the subject, or did you have to talk yourself into going back to the Civil War?
I definitely had to talk myself into it. I really didn't particularly want to go back to that era. But I think one thing that the past 4 years have shown us, that war has not let go. To a degree, it has not let go because we haven't resolved the issues that caused the war, which at heart, of course, is ownership of human beings. There's a Uruguayan writer named, I'll get the pronunciation wrong, Eduardo Gallego, I think it is. He wrote, I think it's so succinct, history never says goodbye. It says, see you later. And the past 4 years feels like that later has arrived again.
So once you were there, was there a comfort with that time?
Well, I mean, I'm not interested, I never have been very interested in the Civil War in terms of generals and troop movements and that kind of thing. But I am interested in the material culture of 19th century America and the intellectual culture of that period. So it gave me a chance to revisit those elements and do some more reading and study in that area.
Some of the most harrowing moments in the novel depict Verena fleeing Richmond with her children. Talk about writing those sections and what that was like to, in your mind, get it right.
Yeah, well, so they left Richmond 2 days, 3 days later. Richmond fell, the city was burned. She was in Charlotte, came into Charlotte on a train, and was met at the station by an angry mob. So she goes from first lady of a made-up country to being, really threatened by a mob. And then shortly below Charlotte, they had to switch to horses and wagons, and it was a camping trip across South Carolina all the way down through Georgia, trying to get to Florida, catch a boat to Havana. So I was trying to get the desperation of those times right, trying to get the sense of they crossed Sherman's path a few months after Sherman had gone through Georgia, how desperate people were, how short food was, all of those things, the destruction of that on top of the general destruction of that war. And she gets to see what her husband's decisions year by year by year over decades led to. And there's a chapter that I am particularly fond of called Hog Fortress, about a man and woman and their children, living in a fortress they've kind of built to protect themselves from everybody. And they say, you know, we'll die right here, or we'll kill whoever comes to take what we have. But this is it. We've drawn our line here. She sees that. She sees the loss. She is aware, is made aware of some of the complicity.
Going back to Cold Mountain for a moment, what was it like to be riding that horse as it's let out of the barn? It's your debut novel.
Yeah.
It comes out and whoosh.
I mean, I get asked sometimes, so was I surprised about the reaction to Cold Mountain? I say, you'd have to be crazy to have been prepared to sit at home for years writing a book, and then it does that. It, you know, number one bestseller. I was hoping the book would sell enough that I would get a better teaching job than I had.
It worked.
Well, it worked well enough not to have a teaching
there
job.
There you go. It's the best one you can get. So does it change your life fundamentally? And does it change it as a writer?
You know, I was in my mid-40s when that happened. And I don't know what it would have been like if I had been 25 when it happened. But, you know, you're a fully formed adult. You've got your life. You've got your stuff, you know, your house, your all that. It didn't change that, you know, that much for me. It didn't change my sense of myself at all. I was very happy and I was proud of the book, but it didn't make me feel like a different person.
I think this is probably a question that someone could ask themselves about something that they've done that's successful that could make you absolutely nuts. But that, what do you think it was about the story? What do you think it was about the novel and your telling of that story that struck such a chord with readers around the world?
Well, as my publisher said, when somebody asked him that question, if we could answer that question, we could do it all the time.
But it's, don't you think, it's more than right place at the right time, isn't it?
Well, I mean, there was some of that. There were a lot of pieces to that. One of the pieces, it was already moving well up the bestseller lists, and then the movie sale happened. There were several things that just progressively gave the sales a bump, and I think the answer of how it did what it did is a multi-step kind of thing.
So with this book just out, do you worry yourself about it sells this number, it sells that number?
Okay, now I'm telling you the absolute truth. I have never Googled myself ever.
We like you.
The thing I can control is writing the book. Sales, I can't. I mean, I can go out here and say, hey, I wrote this book. I hope you like it. But beyond that, that's out of my control. I can write the book that I can write at that particular time. I mean, I like to tell people, you know, I did the best I could in the time that I had. And if I can feel like that, then I'm okay.
And is the best part of your career, is the best part of your writing life, that moment when you were in the actual writing of the book?
Yeah.
The creation?
Yeah, when it can still change. When I see the finished book, it's an odd feeling. It's not exactly a totally happy feeling because it's fixed now. You know, I mean, fixed in place. And I can't go back and tinker. I mean, sometimes when I'm... If I'm reading to a group of people, and if some people are open to the page where I'm reading, sometimes I'm reading and I see, like, oh, you know, I wish I'd used this other word here, and I just do it while I'm reading, and then I see heads pop up. So you wouldn't like Bob Dylan's version of Tangled Up in Blue these days.
Charles Frazier's new novel is Verena. It is published by Echo. Thank you so much for being with us. What a great pleasure to have you on the program.
Thank you.
We enjoy hearing from our listeners about our shows. You can email us at book@wamc.org, and you can listen again to this or find past book shows via podcast or at wamc.org. This was an off-the-shelf edition of The Book Show in partnership with Northshire Bookstore, northshire.com. Sarah LeDuc produces our program. Bookmark us for next week, and thanks for listening for The Book Show. I'm Joe Donahue.